Hello and welcome to another episode of Consumer, the European podcast of the Consumer Choice Center. You are listening to episode 149 on March 21st, 2024. This episode is pre-recorded because currently, as you are listening, the Consumer Choice Center is at a staff retreat in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. And there will be most likely, I'm saying most likely because we had to abandon this in the past, a special episode recorded there, which you can then listen to next week. So I hope you're enjoying this episode in the meantime. My guest this week is Peter Klepper. He's the editor-in-chief of the Brussels Report, which you can find on brusselsreport.eu. And we're talking about the elections in Belgium, which are upcoming and going to be happening at the same time as the European elections. So you can hear the entire exchange at the end of this episode. Also in this episode, what is Consumer Champs? We're talking to my colleague Zoltan Case about that. And clocks are changing at the end of this month, but what actually happened to the reform that the European Union was announcing a while ago? So let's get started first with this topic. And this is a story from The Local, which is a bit old. It's from October 2022. And they asked, whatever happened to the EU plan to ditch changing of the clocks? As many of you will know, we will change the clocks back to summertime at the end of March. So that should be, what is it? Not the weekend that's coming, but the weekend after that. So March 31st is going to be the changing of the clock on the weekend. So we're doing seasonal clock changes in the European Union, which is actually mandatory in the EU for EU member states since 2001. And it's, of course, called daylight savings time because, you know, that was what it was initially doing. But the world definitely has changed in the way that people work ever since. The most successful public consultation is what The Local calls it. In 2018, the European Commission launched a public consultation asking people what they thought of scrapping time changes. It was the most successful EU consultation ever. 4.6 million people participated, in some cases representing a significant portion of the national population. 3.79% for Germany and 2.94% for Austria. People overwhelmingly said they wanted to stop moving the clock back and forward every 6 months. In fact, 84% of respondents agreed with the proposal. But of course, now what happened? Because the European Commission had this proposed legislation in 2018. The European Parliament said overwhelmingly yes to it with a large majority in 2019. And all things pointed towards changes being scrapped in 2021. But what exactly happened? Well, the thing is that some of the members at the European Council were a bit flimsy. Cyprus, Greece, and Malta, less than half of participants in the consultation had agreed. And so the Council was not unanimous on this decision. And the countries then called on the European Commission to do an impact assessment. But that sort of kind of was swept under the table when COVID happened, and we haven't really picked up the conversation since. So all of this has sort of been left hanging, even though a majority of EU respondents say that they support scrapping daylight savings time. So this is where we are. So don't forget to change the clock on March the 31st. I know for most people, the smartwatches and phones do all of that, but we all have that odd oven clock and microwave clock that sort of always indicates the wrong time. Next up, Consumer Champs, a new initiative by the Consumer Choice Center. I talked to my colleague Zoltan Case about what it's all about. Unfortunately, there was some microphone and connectivity issues, so I only have about 2 or 3 minutes of that conversation. But yeah, still, take it away. So Zoltan, thank you so much for joining the Consumer Podcast. We are talking about Consumer Champs, a new project by the Consumer Choice Center. Explain us what is Consumer Champs all about? What is it trying to achieve?
So thank you, Bill, for having me on the show. Well, Consumer Champs is a campaign that looks at European Union candidates. You know, the European Parliament elections are going to take place in June, more specifically between the 6th and 9th of June in the 27 member states. And altogether, we'll have around 12 to 14,000 candidates. With Consumer Champs, we want to look at the attitude of these candidates towards many interesting things like innovation, digital freedom, harm reduction policies, or trade. And we are sending them questions, 11 questions altogether, multiple choice questions, and they can, you know, tell us their preferences, mark whatever they choose, and we'll have a nice ranking of these politicians on how they relate to these issues. It's only the beginning, because we've had only around 2,300 candidates so far, because in most countries, the deadline for announcing candidates lists is April or even like end of April, which is very close to the actual elections. And March and April are going to be very busy with most of the candidates or parties announcing their candidates. So we'll see who's going to be the consumer champs of the Consumer Choice Center. If you want to look at our ranking and look at what we stand for as far as these topics go, you just log on to consumerchamps.eu, and in basically every European Union language, you can look at your candidates. That's one thing. The other thing, if you're a voter, a very interesting thing, because you might not see your candidate on our ranking, but you're interested what he or she thinks of these wonderful topics, so you can encourage your candidate, whether you live in Latvia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, or Poland. Do that. Write to your candidate that you want to know what they stand for.
And then last but not least, we have Peter Klepper as the guest of the week. He's the editor-in-chief of the Brussels Report, which reports on European news. But he is also Belgian and telling us more about what's happening in the run-up to the Belgian elections in June this year.
We're talking today about the upcoming elections in Belgium. I know last time we talked about the European elections, but it so happens that, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Belgian election is on the same day as the European election. Is that correct? Belgium is known as this country that has a very easy time of figuring out its democratic constellations. Can you give us an overview right now in terms of who's in charge, and then going from there, what the polls tell us about the popularity of the people in charge right now?
Well, actually, Belgium is still holding the world record of trying to form a government after an election. I guess maybe if you count Cambodia or something, or maybe Northern Ireland, then they may even beat Belgium. But let's say in the relatively normal democratic context, Belgium beats everybody else, even if countries like Holland have been trying to catch up. So this has been the case since 2010-11. It took a very long time in 2014 when a more or less center-right government was formed. I'm talking about a federal government. Then it was relatively quickly 2019. That was very complicated. Then Mr. Charles Michel was appointed. A different caretaker prime minister, Sophie Wilmès, replaced him after he was appointed as EU Council chairman. And then in the fall of 2020, which was a year and a few months after the 19 June or May 19 election, they did form a Vivaldi government. Vivaldi refers to the four seasons. So you have the Reds, summer socialists, and in Belgium you have a socialist party representing the Francophone population and one representing the Flemish population. So it's time to everything. You have two green parties in that government. You have two blue liberal parties. Blue is the color of the liberals in Belgium. And then you have one Christian Democratic Party. Their color is orange, referring to fall. Now, that Vivaldi government, it can be summed up very succinctly. What they have been doing is pretty much nothing. They couldn't agree on almost anything, because you have basically an electorate of 60% of the population in the north of Belgium that tends to be center-right, and an electorate in Francophone Belgium, in Brussels and Wallonia, that tends to be center-left. So you have all kinds of different points of view when it comes to economic, but also when it comes to how tough to be on crime. And then, of course, there's the demand of the Flemish nationalists that want to decentralize powers. So apart from the federal government, we have a number of regional governments. They are called regions and communities. It's a little complicated because of the protection for the Dutch-speaking minority in Brussels. That's one reason why it's complicated. But these are basically the sort of the decentralized entities in Belgium, but they are legally equal to the federal government. And anyway, the Flemish government, the Flemish nationalists, they want to decentralize power. You have two Flemish nationalist parties. According to the opinion polls, they are the two leading parties of Belgium and, of course, of Flanders. This is the far right Vlaams Belang. They have moderated a little bit, but are still, I would say, a bit more extreme than, for example, the Sweden Democrats or the Austrian FPÖ, which has been going into government. So there's a lot of talk. Are they acceptable in government or not? Many people think that the NVA, which is the sort of center-right Flemish nationalists, that are also, let's say, keen to go to the Flemish state in a negotiated manner, whereas the Vlaams Belang is more confrontational. So they are the second biggest party in Belgium, but they have been losing support for a start because they also are a long time already in power in Flanders. For a bit between 2014 and 2018, they were in power in at the federal level. So it's complicated. Look, what happened in the past is that basically the Flemish nationalists got their demand to get more self-government. So they got more powers in a very, let's say, messy way, not always implemented in a coherent manner. But for the most part, it was a decentralization of powers. In return for money, for paying for more transfers to the Francophone part, which is the poorer part of Belgium. I think 80% of the exports of Belgium are coming out of the Flemish part, of course, also because you have the port of Antwerp there and its chemical industry cluster, which is the second biggest port of Europe after Rotterdam.
So what is interesting to me is that the complaints that the government doesn't get a lot done is not necessarily different to other European countries, but it seems that the electoral repercussions in other European countries, I mean, we have the moment we're recording is still before the Portuguese election, so by the time this airs, we'll have results, but it seems that there's definitely a shift towards both the center-right and the far-right, in the sense that people feel frustrated by the inactivity, the inability of government to make changes. It seems that Belgium is immune from that in a way. Is that because the system is so complicated and it's really hard to be a startup party that sweeps the election because there's so many degrees and levels of government, or because Belgians are just completely disinterested by their own political system? How do you identify sort of the reasoning?
Have to look at the history of Belgium. Belgium is older than Germany. It was founded in 1830, but you could argue that its state institutions date back to the 1300s, 1400s under the Burgundic rulers. And it's always been relatively messy with lots of decentralization, with lots of ability to block, lots of privileges for all kinds of... back then it was the guilds, now it's the trade unions, and in a way this is not bad. Sort of it prevents the state from acting forcefully, which it has done historically a lot more in countries like France and the UK and even the Netherlands. They are way more centralized. So Belgium in that sense is way closer to Switzerland, except that in Switzerland that's a country in the world which is most decentralized in a... let's say, in an optimal manner, because the Swiss cantons have the sort of the highest percentage of tax power as compared to other decentralized entities in the world and in Europe. In Flanders, the decentralized entities, they do have some tax powers, but less than in Switzerland. For me, if you ask me, the ideal solution, well, apart from splitting up the country in a peaceful way, I'm always in favor of that for every country. But I guess we have to admit that's not very realistic. For a start, a majority of Flemish people is against, if you look at any opinion poll. But I do think that most people in Belgium would agree with the principle that any layer of government should only be able to spend what it is able to collect in tax income, and that there should not be any dotations or transfers between regions in order to create maximum accountability. And I don't want to glorify Switzerland, but it is closest to that ideal, so to speak. So I do think that Switzerland is a fantastic model for Belgium. It also has four language groups, if you count the Rito-Roman. Like Belgium, you know, it's on the border of Roman and Romanistic and Germanic Europe. And we're actually going to go there. I'll tell you why, because there's a problem now that the Belgian federal government, they sort of preside over a lot of these social policies. These are basically policies that entail massive promises to people. Oh, you're going to get a pension, you're going to get health care for a reasonable price, you name it. And only things like child care, only things in the margin, elderly care to a degree, have been decentralized. Education, of course, is also something of the regions and communities. But why am I saying that? Because the decentralized entities, they basically have a lot of less important powers, but they have lots of money. And what we saw with a previous big round of reform, institutional reform in Belgium, is that the federal level transferred competences to the decentralized entities without the necessary budgets for that. They basically told, look, we give you now the duty to pay out child benefits. In this case, it was child benefits. And we only give you 75% of the cash that you need for it. Good luck finding it, which was a very good thing because it forced some rationalization to a degree. And I do think there's any other option. Now, in theory, you could say, well, let's, of course, just transfer more money to the federal level. That's definitely an option, but politically, I think that's a no-go with a reality where in the opinion polls, the Flemish nationalists are close to gaining 50% of the percentage and of the seats in Flanders, which will then throw up different questions like, are they gonna come with a declaration of Flemish independence, or are they gonna go down the Catalan road? I don't think so, because of what happened in Catalonia. It's sort of I don't know the situation well enough maybe to judge, but to me, from what I've been able to gather, it looks like they overplayed their hand in Catalonia. They had a good hand, and they overplayed it by experimenting with going outside of the law. It must be said that the leader of the Democratic Flemish Nationalist, Bart De Wever, who's a, I would say, quite a strong proponent of free market policies. I mean, his party is not always, but he is as a person. So he has openly said that we need to consider also going outside of the law, breaking the law, basically. And the argument that he gave was not so crazy. He said, look, if you look at the introduction of the right to vote, this was unconstitutional in Belgium. He pointed at a number of other examples, I don't necessarily I don't endorse that. I think it's dangerous to go outside of law because of the Catalan precedent. But I'm pretty sure De Wever, the mayor of Antwerp and the leader of the NVA, I think he meant that he would only do that if there was political agreement with the other sides, with the Francophones. And in that sense, in that context, I'm still not a big fan of it, because then also it may not be so may not be possible. But it's perhaps a different route. You know, sometimes you have to think of more creative solutions, I guess. Maybe one thing I didn't mention is that we see a massive rise of the anti-system parties. So the France Belong serves as the far-right France Belong as an anti-system party, is attracting lots of votes for people that are simply against excessive migration chaos, and that are not necessarily on board with everything that the France Belong supports when it comes to decentralizing Belgium. And the same you see in Francophone Belgium. There, the anti-system party of choice, the preferred anti-system party, are the communists, the Parti Travailliste Belgium, the PTB. They even polled at the biggest party in Brussels, which I think is quite quite worrying. Brussels is a very special breed. At the moment, they have a budget deficit of 34%. It's a great city, but it's losing and missing out on fantastic opportunities every single day. And of course, the chief responsible for that is the Brussels political class.
Well, let me interject here, and we have very little time left, Peter, but I wanted to get in on this, because any project of decentralization will run into the problem of the existing debt, which was taken up together. Even if you decentralize, the question will still remain, who pays back the debt and how is it being paid back? And if one side doesn't take responsibility because it says, well, ultimately our system was a north to south transfer, and that's why we had to take up all of this debt, well, then who will be in charge of reconciling that? Without Flanders, Wallonia cannot pay that back. So ultimately, that will be an issue. And then, of course, I remember that during the crisis, one of the big issues was that, you know, the budgetary soundness of Belgium is just not guaranteed. Has there been any reckoning on that sense? Where does it look currently fiscally for Belgium? And is that something that is reconcilable with trying to decentralize the country? If one side demands decentralization, can Belgium at the same time also clean up its act in terms of its budget?
Well, there's several things. The debt is only an issue if you want to split Belgium. And there we have had an interesting rumor back in 2019 when the leader of the Flemish side, Bart De Wever, was negotiating with the leader of the Francophone side, Paul Magnet, the leader of the Parti Socialiste, in Francophone Belgium. And according to, well, rumors, but I mean, I think it's confirmed that this was true. I personally know some the journalist that was able to confirm it from different sources. Bart De Wever has said, look, you can have the name Belgium, I don't care, to Paul Magnet. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was even Paul Magnet who brought up the subject, which was quite surprising, because typically it's always the Flemish nationalists that bang on about Flemish independence and stuff like that. However, the debt, or you could say moreover the dire financial situation of the Belgian state, the budget deficit at the federal level is also very high. I think 8% at least, don't shoot me, but it's very high. They have to look for billions and billions just when they are supposed to also increase defense spending to meet the NATO 2%. And indeed, that is playing an important role in the likely upcoming negotiations on institutional reform. And this is for the reason that I mentioned, that the federal level is bleeding dry and it's getting very, very hard to find any savings at the federal level. Well, I mean, of course, people like us, together with President Milei, it would not take more than an afternoon. But of course, if you're in the political reality of a Western European welfare state, then in all realism, I think the obvious compromise will be to look at, the parts of the Belgian state where a lot of money can be found. And then we're not only talking about the regions and the communities. They have lots of money, as I mentioned, without necessarily all that many responsibilities. They spend a lot of money, for example, on education. It's only Sweden that spends more than the Belgian state for education in the OECD. They spend gigantic sums, and it has had the opposite effect. Belgium quality of education has completely crashed. It's such a sad story in the last 20 years because of all kinds of left-wing experiments with education to try to, you know, actively reduce the quality of people's education. So the obvious, I think the obvious compromise will be to look at that, look at the money that these decentralized entities have and tell them, look, why don't we give you just a bunch of responsibility to deliver all kinds of social promises, and you already have a lot of that money, so you will find savings. And then secondly, of course, Belgium has these you could say states within the state. The railway company is deeply corrupt. The postal company, which is a listed company on the stock exchange, but there's a massive corruption scandal that has come to the fore now, where the company was trying to, you know, bribe competitors for a tender to get subsidies from the Belgian government in order to, pay some of the invoices of distribution of newspapers and magazines. So this is how politicians try to buy the media in Belgium. Then these big Belgian media conglomerates that get all that cash, then they buy up many of their Dutch competitors. A lot of the Dutch media are in the hands of Belgian groups, mostly taxpayers funded. The European Commission cannot care less. They don't do their jobs. This also, anyway, I think like also at the regional level, if you look at the Flemish bus company, for example, I mean, you could go on and on. Like we have these stories of epic government waste every single day, both in Flanders, both at the federal level. So if you really have to, you can find savings. As I mentioned, I think the easy way out would be for politicians to avoid trying to find too many savings, but to go down the route of decentralization, to decentralize these powers.
Well, that's as much time as we have for today. Peter Klepper, thank you so much for joining the Consumer Podcast. If anyone from Belgium is listening, you definitely haven't made things easier for their decision coming up in June. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And that concludes this week's episode of Consumer. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow Peter Klepper on X at Peter Klepper and follow the Brussels Report.eu at Brussels_report. And of course, don't forget the Consumer Choice Center on X as well at Consumer Choice C. As always, I'm your host, Bill Wertz, and I'll see you hopefully next week with a special episode.